I'm Carrie Doan, and welcome to Clearly Connected. You're listening to episode 34. I'm a life coach, business consultant, speaker, and a big-hearted entrepreneur. I live in the colorful city of Cincinnati, Ohio with my family, and through my work, I've helped hundreds of conscious people overcome their personal fears so that they can find their way to a connected, more confident way of life in work, finance, and relationships. You're enjoying this podcast ad-free because of the generous support of subscribers to Clearly Connected on Spotify. You can learn more at carriedoan.com, where we'll continue the conversation we start here about connection for anyone who wants to move beyond the beliefs that keep them stuck. If you struggle with insecurity or chronic fear and anxiety, or if you just need a few minutes away from the constant stream of information, well, you're in the right place for finding that safe space of connection. Today's question? How do we learn to be happy? And what mindset can we apply to add more joy and pleasure to our lives? Listen in. Well, welcome back, all you beautiful people. Today, I am so excited for this episode because I have the pleasure of interviewing my guest, Parker Hughes, about the unending quest for happiness that we are all on as a human species. And our conversation is going to be centered on how to achieve happiness in ways that you might not even think about. These are ways that primarily center around simple shifts in our perception, which will make happiness accessible to anyone at any moment in time. So before we get into all of that, I want to go ahead and introduce my guest, Parker. He is a chiropractor, an author, and blogger. He was featured on the American Ninja Warrior show and is a serial adventurer living in Salt Lake City, Utah. Parker believes that learning and growing are the keys to living a full life, which is what inspired him to start the Getting Gooder series to help people create the happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest lives imaginable. Parker thinks that you can have your ideal life right now while at the same time building an even better life for the future. So, Parker, I am thrilled to have this conversation with you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carrie. I'm really happy to be here. It's just kind of an intro into my podcasting world, so I hope y'all like it and give me tips and tricks that you think I could learn from and grow from. Because, like she said at the top, that's something that's the key to a long and happy life, and I want to have that.
Absolutely. I feel like we're going to blow people's minds today.
So hope so.
We're going to set the bar real high. And, you know, you and I met recently, actually, at this finance retreat that we attended called Camp Phi. And I was intrigued by your talk on happiness and how it was overlapping with my talk on pleasure and how those two things intersect with money. So it inspired me to reach out to you because I thought we could have this pretty dynamic chat around happiness, not just as it relates to money, but all aspects of life. So we're gonna do our best to get this under an hour. I don't know. You think we can do it?
We're going to be tackling a pretty big topic. And yeah, as soon as you gave that presentation at Camp Phi, I knew that we'd have some pretty good long conversations. We'll try to keep it brief for all you people out there driving in the car who only have a 30-minute commute or so, but it's a big topic. We'll probably be coming back to it soon.
It sure is. If anything, we'll get some good sound bites, I think.
Yep, so. Right.
Okay, well, I want to kick it off by asking you, this is something I ask all my guests, if you don't mind to share a little bit about your personal story. And you know, I perceive you to be someone who has such a positive outlook on life. And I'm wondering, I don't know, can you share a bit about where that originated from or how you kind of came to where you're at today in terms of like how you perceive the world?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate you saying that. It's something that I honestly have worked for. It wasn't something that came extremely naturally to me. I was always, as a child, maybe considered a happy kid, but There were definitely some of those teenage angst years for me that didn't look quite as happy as I would have wanted it to be when I look back at it. I would say that now, though, the really large transition that made me have a more positive outlook on life, and I really do feel that I have a more positive look on life than most, and that really came out of learning from experience from other people and deciding from what I've experienced in others and how they interact with the world, what I wanted for my life. I would say mainly the way that people interact with stress had impacted me greatly. My parents, for example, I think had a difficult relationship with distress. The difference between distress and eustress, some of you may know that distress is something that makes you feel stress, uncomfortable in a bad way, anxious, that kind of thing. Eustress, which is Latin for you being good, is stress that can be helpful for you, things that make you feel more alive, feel stronger, feel healthier, that kind of thing. Anyway, I saw these examples of distress in my life and how they've negatively impacted my parents mainly, and it impacted my mom's health from the amount of stress that she self-inflicted on herself, as well as impacted their marriage. They're now divorced, and it was an example to me of how I wanted to limit the amount of this distress that's in my life and lean into the eustresses that make my life better and happier and healthier, even though those eustresses might be a little bit uncomfortable. And so that was probably the biggest change for me that gave me a more positive outlook is, number one, feeling like I had the ability to control what type of stress to impose on myself. Yes, there's going to be moments where I have distress imposed on me without me asking for it. It's involuntary, but I can control my reaction to those things by leaning into things that are uncomfortable, leaning into eustress in order to train my body and my mind to be able to handle the things that are distress, so that when they inevitably come up, because we know that we get stressed for things that are out of our control, but when those things inevitably come up, I kind of have trained myself through leaning into eustress, handle those things. I can handle those things that involuntarily come my way, and I can grow from them rather than be feeling like I'm a victim of it. That was 100% the biggest mental shift that I had to improve my outlook.
Wow. I love that. I love how you're making that distinction too of those kind of two different types of stress. I've never heard it stated that way. And I fully agree with you that it's something around our perception of what we can control in our lives and letting go of the rest, which, you know, we hear these words a lot, but I think until you actually make that conscious choice to say or to be able to distinguish what are the things that I can control versus what I can't, but then to kind of like make that conscious choice to say, all right, this is what I'm going to be in charge of. It can be so liberating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one question that came up for me as you're talking about this is, obviously at some point you had this awareness that you had a choice in the matter of how you could perceive that stress and what you could do with it. And I think I come across a lot of people who don't realize that they do have that power to choose. And so do you have recollection of when you became aware of that? Like, I can choose this?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you heard of the book 7 Habits of Highly Effective People?
Oh, yeah. I read that one a couple times.
Yeah, that was a very impactful beginning for me and my ability to control what I can control and let go of the things that I can't control. There's a intro into that book where he talks about the circle of control versus your circle of influence versus your circle of concern. And they're kind of this In my opinion, I kind of reframe this in my own book, but the circle of concern is the widest circle. It's the biggest circle there. You have all these things you're concerned about. Then you have your circle of control, which is the smallest circle, the things that are actually things that you can control. And then the circle of influence is kind of this medium in between, but it depends. Your circle of influence can grow or shrink depending on how you live your life. And from learning from him in that book, my circle of control, I realized, is going to stay rather small. And that's not a bad thing. That's something that's actually pretty liberating, because it lets me know, all right, there are a limited number of actions that I can take that are worth my concern, that are worth me worrying about. If it's not something that I can actually control and affect with my own actions, then I've trained myself, and this has been a long, long process, trained myself to truly let go of those things that are out of my control. Mm-hmm. And say, okay, I'm going to let that roll off my shoulder, mind like water. I'm going to let it flow through me, flow around me, flow off me. And the things that I can control, I'm going to be a sharpened arrow, an arrowhead pointed directly at, that's what I need to do in order to affect the outcome that I want. If I can change it, I will change it, and I'll go head first towards that. If I can't, then it's going to just flow around me.
So good. Oh man, I'm really trying hard to not take this into like a deep rabbit hole, because like, I gotta say briefly, you know, one thing that I've learned, like what you're talking about, this letting go of what you can't control, is something that so many people struggle with. Mm-hmm. And I've sat with this question for a long time. And what I've realized is that this tendency to want to control, I believe, is a coping strategy that we develop early in life to get our needs met. And we do it in all kinds of different ways. However, we get to a point where that strategy no longer serves us, especially as we become adults. And so once you get to that point, it's no longer productive. And when you can cross that bridge to learn how to surrender to those areas of life, it's so freeing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, I come across, I mean, my clients, it's like, there's a fear of, well, what will happen if I do let go of control? I'm terrified, right? This is where fear comes in. And there's this process of learning to trust that you're going to be safe when you do make those little steps. So anyways, that's a huge theme that keeps coming up as I have conversations with people. And I think that that's why, I mean, I'd love to know your thoughts on that too, if you have anything to add.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people think that they are, this may seem like it's a, this comment may seem like it's defeating, but it's not. A lot of people think that they're more important than they actually are. And I say that in a liberating way, not in a self-defeating way, because not only can you let go of the fact that you are the keystone in a scenario and not be so stressed and anxious because of that pressure of being this important figure in the outcome of things, but you can also give trust to the people around you that may also have the agency to affect the outcome too. You can grow your relationships in that way by having trust in people that, if it's a interpersonal thing, then you can trust that they will make the decisions that's right for them, and that you will make the decisions that are right for you. And so a lot of this fear is based around sense of security of like what will happen. And we'll talk about that later, I'm sure, of like, my big question for them is literally, what is the worst that can happen? And compare that to the advantages of doing the alternative of letting go of this. And oftentimes it's a conversation between stress and pain and anxiety versus leaning into joy and happiness and a little bit of the insecurity that comes with that, but in a beneficial, you stressful type of way.
Okay. Well, you said that word security, and I want to go there right now, actually, because I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I'm starting to believe that so much of the way we perceive security is in fact an illusion, meaning like to an extent, given that anything can change at any moment, right? We're not guaranteed tomorrow. And yet we'll do things, and I'm saying we, specifically even talking about myself, things like putting a lot of trust in maybe my financial portfolio, or maybe it is in people, and that's not bad, or maybe it's the government. I don't know what it is, but like when we place our sense of security externally, it to me is an illusion, because really the freedom that we get to the most is from internally, like feeling, I don't know if confidence is the right word, or just feeling secure in who we are as people. And so that is the only sustainable, I think, real sense of security that we can have long term. So tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that word externally is exactly the operative word in that scenario of external security versus internal security. Internal security is freedom, is success, is confidence, is courage. It's the ability to jump out of the plane without a parachute and knowing that you can still have the wings, or grow the wings on the way down to fly and make it an enjoyable, exciting pursuit. I'll tell you a little story about myself. It's something that I am still struggling with now, because I put a lot of pressure on myself to achieve in this way. But financially, my security is, my current outlook is grim. Like I am not as secure and confident with my financial situation as I wanted to be. Granted, I have very large goals of retiring in 10 years or less before I'm 40 years old. And that is advanced compared to most people, of course. But also currently, for the last year, I haven't even worked a stable job, because I was deciding between starting a practice in one location. I'm a chiropractor, as you said at the top. And so deciding between going back and forth between Jackson Hole, Wyoming and Salt Lake City, which is not a tough choice, that's for sure. It's a hard choice, but it's a choice between two good things. But anyway, I made this choice to leave a practice that I was in before to pursue my ideal life, one of entrepreneurship, and also one of scheduling freedom. So my practice is only going to be open 20 hours a week, and I am going to be working for myself, building clientele from the very ground up, having no real basis to stand on. And so that was scary, still is scary. Like, I am literally just starting the practice in 5 days. October 1st is the opening day. Wow. And this last year, I haven't worked for anybody. I've been kind of doing random odd jobs here and there, which helped me get by, but it's scary. It's insecure. And I've had the courage and the confidence and the trust in myself, this internal dialogue that says, you will be okay. You will be able to make it work. I'm currently flying out of the plane. I'm headed towards the ground quickly, right? Like, it feels like financial rock bottom. Like, my car just busted its transmission 3 days ago, and that was a big drop. Like, I'm getting real vulnerable with you guys here. It was a very, very defeating moment. And at the same time, I've built the wings to be able to bounce back from that low point very quickly. It may have been like a 24-hour period of what felt like rock bottom, but it was quickly answered by my confidence and trust in myself. Those things are going to happen. You're going to have moments when you feel like, holy cow, my world is crumbling. but yeah. It's your ability to bounce back from that to like build those wings or a skipping pad or a trampoline to bounce you back at the bottom really quickly and give you an extra little bit of hang time and confidence and trust in yourself that it's okay. This isn't the worst thing ever. Like, I'm still alive. I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I still have so many things to be grateful for. I can do this.
I love that. Thank you for being so transparent with that, because I was thinking to myself, this is why I wanted to have you on to talk about this in particular, because and you shared this a little bit with me previously, is that on the outside, these externals aren't really there. And yet internally, you're really happy. And like, you know, you have this courage. And so according to society, it doesn't add up. Well, how can you feel that without those other things being in place first? And I just don't think it works like that. It works by what you just described, having courage to face your fears, to take leaps into the unknown, and trust that you have what it takes to navigate that. And that is actually like how you build or pave the way towards an ultimately free life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these are the stories that actually inspire people, right? Because we love when an underdog or somebody you wouldn't expect somehow finds the courage within themselves to slay their demons and dragons and still win. So I appreciate that. And, you know, one thing that I was thinking to myself that I'd like your thoughts on as it relates to this whole like security piece is, you know, I think that we live in a pretty traumatized culture. And when I say trauma, I mean like not necessarily, you know, we're in this like war zone, although make that case in another way, but that we're living in a very stressed, almost toxic culture with the ways that we treat our bodies, live our lives. And so I think because of that fact that people are carrying around a lot of pain, unresolved trauma, stress, that creates that fear. And so I don't know. I'm wondering, when you think about the reality that so many people are facing, and then here we are talking about like internal sense of security, how do you help somebody bridge that gap, right? To get from riddled with fear to, oh, I can do this, like feeling really good and confident. I mean, I don't think it's a quick little thing, but what's the first thing that comes to your mind in terms of like?
I think this is a big question that requires a lot of mental shifts as well as skill development. And I think in that way helps to build your confidence in things. I think the easiest, most low-hanging fruit is to practice leaning into what I talked about at the top, leaning into hard, difficult things or uncomfortable things, embracing discomfort in a voluntary way. Because by doing that, by leaning into small little discomforts, like jumping into cold water or running in the hot sun or just being outside in all types of weather, that type of small discomfort helps you to foster this sense of agency about your life, that this sense of control. Like, you went and you decided to go out into the snowstorm and run a mile, even if it's something small. I went out into the snowstorm and I shoveled snow for 2 hours in the bitter cold because I want, like, not even because it was my driveway, just because I wanted to go out there and do it and like get a workout by doing it, right? By leaning into that, by leaning into this voluntary nature, voluntarily stepping out into uncomfortable situations, that will help you generate this sense of control over things that are uncomfortable. And so then fear slowly transforms from this thing that you feel like you're a victim of to a thing that you can manipulate and and choose to integrate in your life and use as motivation and a fodder for the flame that you're building, like something that you're really passionate about. For me, it's starting this practice, owning my own business, building this lifestyle that I really love, and having that be the priority. That is, it was scary. The logistics of making that happen were scary because I had to leave the things that I knew that were secure and stable in order to do that. But I could use that fear as motivation, as, okay, I really don't want that to happen. And so I'm going to be really focused in the moments when I am working towards this goal to make it happen as best as I can. I'm not distracted by the other things in my life in the moments where I'm working. So if I'm doing this 20-hour a week schedule type of thing, that's my decision not to spend all my time working. So by working only 20 hours a week, I need to be very focused, very on point, very engaged with my clients in order to give them the best care that I can and just be the best that I can be. And that wouldn't happen as easily if I weren't scared of the outcomes that I would fail. So the fear is necessary, but I'm using it and I'm manipulating it. What I say is I undress my demons. So I'm not getting rid of them. I'm not vanquishing my demons. I'm just like undressing them and exposing their naked, embarrassing selves to the world and making them feel small, making those demons feel small. And then I can manipulate them. I can redress them up into like a cute little doll or a less intimidating creature, right? So that's what how I like to view my fears.
I love that. I mean, it's great. It's a great visual on how to kind of like even maybe make it comical or light and take that sort of charge, that negative charge out of it.
It's kind of like in Harry Potter. I don't remember the name of the spell, but they do this spell where they take their most feared thing, the spider for Ron or the mentor for Harry, and they try to convert it into something that's playful and enjoyable.
Yeah, it's amazing how that can just change the whole energy around it, or just the process becomes not such a big deal, right? Not so heavy.
And that's usually what happens. Like, it's usually just small tweaks that are used to make your life better, not necessarily huge changes.
Yes, yes. Well, and what you were just talking about, to me, I feel like you're describing the hero's journey. I don't know if you're, are you familiar with Joseph Campbell?
Yep.
Yeah. And so I can so relate too. It's like there is a cost in a way. Like, you have to be willing to let go of what's familiar. I mean, I did this a couple years ago when I left my marriage, which ironically was around the time I was reading a lot about the hero's journey. You have to like make that choice to go away from what's familiar, and it's scary as hell. And as you move through that process and you lose a lot, you also start to gain that sense of self in the process, or the confidence, or, you know, you're like rebuilding your identity as somebody different. And so I don't know that there's really any shortcuts to getting there other than kind of what we were just talking about, is like, maybe reframing that process, or are there ways? I always ask myself with anything that's hard, is there a way to make this playful? You know, does it have to be heavy? And so kind of getting curious about the process of those insecure moments to see if, maybe there's a way I can change the narrative around this. So I love what you're highlighting there. And I actually, as you're talking about this, I was talking to this little boy yesterday. I think he's like 7 years old, and he's so sweet. He was telling me about how he's been overcoming his fear of dogs, because he was just like petrified. He was starting to get to the point where he wouldn't even leave his house to go walk around the block. And so he was working with his mom on this, and they slowly would go outside and walk past the fences and see the dogs. And he was so proud of himself. He's like, I'm just not afraid anymore. And I was so excited because that is an example of what we're all contending with. You know, whatever the fear is, if it's even the fear of success or fear of failure, that in these moments where we make that choice to say, like, yeah, it doesn't feel safe, but I'm safe enough within myself to trust that I have what it takes to move toward it. And I don't know, I was just high-fiving this little guy. So it's just a sweet moment of celebration. Be like, yeah, you did it. You built that confidence. So
what gave you the motivation, the courage, the confidence to leave your marriage? What was it internally that?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think that I had this sense that there was more. There was something more out beyond the sort of like bounds of that relationship that I wasn't able to have access to within the context of that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it's hard for me to quantify. It was just kind of like this sense of freedom or growth. I think it was growth, actually, because I've come to realize that that is one of my highest values. Mm-hmm. And I had the sense that, like, if I stayed, that growth process was going to be inhibited. And so so I kind of I sensed this, right? But also I knew I was going to lose a lot of security, mm-hmm. like a lot. Mm-hmm. And I did. I lost friends, family, partner, financial security. But I did, you know, I had one friend who I, previous to that decision, I had said, you know, if I do this, will you have my back to like be kind of a lifeline through this process? And he was like, yeah, I got you. And so that, I don't know if I could have done it fully. I'm not sure, but I don't know if I could have done it without that one person saying like, I'll be there. And it was a really, I mean, it was a radical time of loss, change, transformation. But through that process of just like you said, like I'm free falling, but I do believe somewhere inside that I have what it takes and I'm just going to keep taking the next step. And then lo and behold, it's like, shoot, my life is like way better than I could have ever imagined. Right. Like I couldn't have made this up in my mind. Yeah. And here I am living it. And that's the goal that you get on the other side, I think, of taking these risks of saying like, I believe in myself enough to go after it. Then you get the reward.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Anyways, there's that story.
Yeah. And usually people in your situation or in many situations, financial security is something that is one of the bigger fears of theirs, is that they will lose this financial security to be okay, whatever. But there are so many examples of the poorest people in the world that are just exceptionally happy and enjoying so much of their life and without even a realization or a concept of that there's more necessarily, that there's something else. And I think I've had examples of that too, just in this last year, of feeling those fears of being financially unstable, but having them be the happiest year of my life, 100% happiest year. Like I've leaned into all the things that make me the happiest, which ends up not being that expensive, which is fabulous. It just all works out so beautifully in that way. And I've seen how I can be in the middle of like a forest all by myself and just like crying tears of joy totally randomly. And this is more than just a ecstatic moment, like the ups and downs of someone who's manic. That's not what this is. This is like a true deep satisfaction and fulfillment with life, and it had nothing to do with my financial situation whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Actually the opposite of that.
It's beautiful, really. I mean, it's like you're highlighting that some of the simplest moments are the ones that create the most bliss. Mm-hmm. Right? And I mean, for you, would you say, could you have gotten there without it having to wade through that sort of insecurity around your finances? Or like, did that magnify those moments, do you think? Or could you have accessed it regardless?
I think there is a gigantic value to having the contrasts of life. The contrast of the low moments and the high moments. I think that you can get to a place similar to what I've experienced through simple practices of gratitude and being so awed and in the state of wonder that it just bliss comes naturally. For me, that's out in nature because I just am so awe inspired by that. And it can also come through people. I'm so awed by people doing amazing things and seeing the work that they put into something be fulfilled, or just see them enjoy being in the moment. So I think that there's a possibility to make that happen. You don't have to like construct a really devastating scenario for yourself in order to achieve this level of happiness. However, having those experiences, having a healthy relationship with those negative experiences will create this beautiful contrast that will make bliss more accessible.
Gosh, you said it. You really just said it. I mean, I'm thinking about like years and years ago, I was on an antidepressant and I had like gone through postpartum depression with both my kids. And I just remember, and I've heard other people confirm this too, they tend to give you this kind of neutral stance in life, right? Because it brings you up out of that negative feeling, but you also, the compromise is that you don't get to experience the highest highs, right? Everything's just kind of like low level and even, which I guess is better than terrible. But I remember in that time period thinking like, oh, I'm missing out on something. And it was that. It was the contrast. It's like, okay, I feel better in a way, but I know that I'm also not disallowing myself to feel higher or more. So I think what you're saying is so true. As long as you can kind of work that relationship with those harder times or reframe things or be able to see it as a opportunity, a gift for you instead of something happening to you. If you can take that negative and then, you know, position that next to the positives, then you have a perspective that, I don't know, quite frankly, is like impenetrable, I think, right?
Yeah, it's worth checking into the book Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. He is a notable Stoic researcher and philosopher. He really just studies the philosophies of other Stoics and relays that information more or less. But The Obstacle is the Way is just a bumper sticker, good lesson to live by. You know, lean into the obstacle, lean into the discomfort, and you can usually find yourself coming out better on the other side than when you went into it.
Yes, that's a great book. I love Stoic philosophy too. You know, okay, I know time's getting away from us and I there's so many things I want to get to.
Yeah.
Okay, this one I want to touch on though, because we alluded to it earlier and it was around like this idea of making things light. Because I've become aware of in our culture, there seems to be this sort of addiction to certainty that we can get stuck in, which is, you know, I think we all have needs for some level of certainty. But when we get addicted to it, then it impedes our level of joy. So I've started to kind of play with the idea that, okay, our play and adventure and pleasure, like, could those be sort of the antidote to getting stuck in that place? And I don't know, I'm just kind of like marinating in this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, Parker, on like, how do you incorporate adventure and play and maybe pleasure into your day-to-day life. I know you said gratitude, so maybe that's in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But as a way to kind of like elevate your experience of life.
Yeah, it's essential. Absolutely essential in every single area of my life. Even in my practice and how I treat people. My primary way to treat pain is to have people play with their movements to figure out where that's actually causing pain. I deal with mostly musculoskeletal stuff, things that deal with muscles and joints and stuff like that. But even in my practice, it seems like play would not have a place there. But in my practice, when I'm treating people that have problems with movement, I have them play with the movement. Go outside and see if running on your toes is different than running from your heels. See if climbing a tree feels different than doing a pull-up in a gym. Playing with all these different movements, it helps people get the agency that they can control and manipulate their body. And the same is true for all areas of life. Play is just like an essential for me to live a long and happy and fulfilled life. It's literally, I don't even know how to express the words for you how important it is. A lot of times when we're adults and we have gone through this younger phase, we lose sight of playfulness and our imagination and joy because we think that responsibility is the opposite of play. And they both can exist. They both can completely exist simultaneously. And actually with more success than if they existed alone or one in place of the other. Mm. Like from my perspective, I think that being out in nature is my favorite way to express variability and play and uncertainty into my life, because nature is a place where things aren't necessarily certain. There's changes in the landscape. There's undulations in the trail. There's changes in the weather. There's different factors to take into play of people on the trail or other bikers that like people and animals and all these things create variability into the landscape and into your experience with it, so that it makes you uncertain, but in a positive way. And as we've talked about, certainty really just comes from the foundation of fear. The only reason why certainty exists is because we're scared of uncertainty.
Wow. That, you are so right. You are. And I, again, like, this is even one that I question as being like kind of an illusion, because the nature of life is always changing, right? Like, yeah, we think that things are certain and we think things are predictable, and maybe to some extent they are, maybe, but there's so much that isn't. And so to acknowledge that as a way to contend with the fear, gosh, and I really love what you're saying about how the interplay between responsibility and play. And I agree. I think when we become adults, something happens, you know, where we forget, or the demands of life create stress, which takes away from our tendency to prioritize that into our life, or to even really see the opportunities that are always there to play. You know, one of the things that I do in my practice is something called micro adventures. I don't know if you, have you heard of these?
No, explain.
Oh man, okay. Well, probably 5 years ago, I came across this guy in the UK. His name's Alistair Humphreys, and he coined this word micro adventure. And he's like a world adventurer. He does like biking all through, I don't even know how many times he circled the globe, but he created this concept as a way to help people to see, like, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to take a lot of time to create adventure and play. You can literally do it in the context of a 9-to-5 corporate work week schedule. And so the idea is, when you get off at 5 o'clock, you grab your sleeping bag, maybe a friend, and you go sleep out under the stars anywhere. Like, it doesn't even need to be public land. Mm-hmm. You just go somewhere. And then you sleep under the stars, you wake up, and then the next morning you go back to work by 9 a.m. And you might be a little tired, but at least you've had this novel experience of being connected to nature, and hopefully feeling like the benefits of that before you even go back into your workday. Mm. So I came across that and immediately I started inviting my friends. I said, guys, I really want to do this. So we proceeded once a month for a couple years to do that. We would go sleep out anywhere, or we'd take, you know, river trips and sling up hammocks. And I mean, we have some incredible stories. And so now I offer that to people who want, it's, you know, a way of connection on all levels. You know, mm-hmm. you're getting more connected with yourself by, like you said, going into this less predictable environment mm-hmm. and seeing what you're capable of. You're maybe, if you take somebody, you're connecting to that person and bonding with them through that experience. And you're connecting to your environment, to nature, mm-hmm. to maybe the cosmos, if you're looking at the stars.
Yeah.
And to me, it's such a high payoff experience for literally $0. And so, I don't know, I'm with you 100% on this idea of like, you could have it anyway, right? You can play however you want, but the cheapest one available is like right in your backyard.
Yeah, right.
Why right. not go for it?
Exactly. Yeah. A little bit of a healthy frugality too has kind of helped me foster that play too of, all right, I'm going to sleep in my car and find a free campsite on the side of the road rather than finding a hotel to stay at. Those types of things in my experience have been pivotal for my experience of play and adventure and my sense of curiosity about the world and my ability to handle weird events that come up, because inevitably when you do something like that, you can experience some weird scenarios and have some stories to tell afterwards. And so I think a little bit of that financial independence and frugality world that I came from, or I kind of started in, helped to reinforce the sense of play and adventure that we're talking about now.
And I bet you have some good stories, don't you?
Oh, too many.
Yeah. I know. I think like I need to get a book out about some yeah. things, because it's like exciting stuff, you know? You're living on the edge a little more.
Yep.
So, oh gosh. Okay, I have one more concept I want us to like touch on before we tie this up.
And yeah.
it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it could be a bigger thing, but I want to see if we could distill it down. Because you mentioned earlier about, you mentioned success. And also you said something about like people who are in poor areas sometimes seem to have like this higher level of happiness. And I agree with you. Like I've experienced both like very impoverished people groups and really wealthy ones. And some in either camp, there's like, could be highly happy or highly unhappy. And so it calls into question the idea that we have in our culture around success and what that actually means and how it's defined. And so I'm wondering, like, how do you define success and or how do you think we could redefine it in our culture?
Yeah, I have a pretty solitary view on this nowadays. And I think that how I define success for myself is to have this feeling of being the happiest person that I know. And I usually like to ask people that too. Do you feel like the happiest person you know? And obviously when you're in a room full of three people and they all say yes, that can't be true, but that's not the point. It's not really a comparison against you and somebody else. It's just an internal, like, wow, I cannot believe how happy I am. I cannot believe this bliss that I live in on a day-to-day basis. There's like, there can't be a way that someone's happier than me. Like, to have that, to have that sense about yourself, man, that is the ultimate form of success. There's nothing more to that. There's so many factors that go into that feeling, whether it from a health perspective, a wealth perspective, a freedom or a pursuit of a sense of purpose, all of these things go into play. An attitude of gratitude is probably my most special use for happiness. But man, to have that sensation, to be in the woods crying out of pure bliss and just smiling like you're an insane person is, oh, it's something that you just have to share with the world. Something that I feel so called to shout from the rooftops and draw as many people as I possibly can in on that same goal, because it's so special.
That's really beautiful. I am tracking with you. I think what you're saying, it's like reminding me of, was it Gandhi that said, you know, if you want to change the world, you start by changing yourself, right? And like, that is the locus center of control. And when you get to that point where you change to the degree of feeling that level of joy or bliss, number one, it's magnetic. And number two, it's like it's such an abundant perspective that it, like, everything that comes out of you is just flowing onto other people. And what a satisfying feeling to know that you being your fullest self is benefiting everyone else around you. They are receiving the contribution of the internal success that you've accomplished in your life. Mm. Like, I tell people all the time, like, doesn't get much better than that. Like, what could truly top that?
Yeah, really. I don't know of anything.
Yeah. So
I think this will dovetail too into a future conversation about selfishness and how that might not be the swear word that a lot of our culture seems to think it is, about being completely selfish, and how the definition of that can enhance the world around you and not really be that negative, carry that negative connotation that it often does.
Oh my God. I was just thinking to myself, we have got to have a part two on that one.
Absolutely.
That is one that I am like, I've been trying to reframe and redefine and talk about for 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. because there's so much power in, I think, flipping that narrative and drawing that, what, energy towards ourselves, so that we can have that outflow of success or abundance onto other people. It's so counter to what we're taught. Mm-hmm. At least I know in my culture, I'm assuming like other people have heard that narrative too. And so, yeah, rewriting that, because it's not helping many people.
Yep. Yeah, so it has to be associated with, or has to pair with, a very healthy relationship with what makes you happy in order for that to, for the whole premise to work. But yes, to be completely selfish from this place of deep happiness and pleasure, mm-hmm. is, I think, not a swear word. I think it's a very noble pursuit.
Mm. With you on that one, giving you a high five right now. Okay, Parker, I want to keep going for another hour, but I'm gonna put a time stop on this, but we will have to engage in a part two on this selfishness piece.
Absolutely.
Too long. So I do want to ask you the two questions I ask all my guests before we end up or tie this up, which is, first thing, what are you up to today that has you excited? I feel like you alluded to lots of things, but
there are so many things. I've got this new practice that I'm starting in Utah, just south of Salt Lake City. I've got a book that I'm working on, a kind of a part two to the book that I started and published 2 years ago. This one's called Getting Gooder. It's similar to the rest of the Getting Gooder brand. So I've got a blog that I am leaning into quite heavily and trying to grow, as well as a podcast that I'm starting. A lot of things that are giving me a lot of enjoyment, mostly around teaching and educating the world. That's something that is a deep internal mission, my North Star right now. And so that's something I'm leaning into.
Well, I'm so glad, because you have a gift of that. I mean, just kind of hearing you articulate the concepts in what I think is a pretty digestible way. It's like, we need to hear that. So I'm so glad you're leaning into it. And in starting, well, I guess kind of like expanding this brand of yours. So that leads into my next question, which is where can people find more of you or your content and what you're producing in terms of your blog or website?
Yeah, the blog is called gettinggooder.org. The book that I published is called Lifelong Youth, but you'll find that on the website as well. There's a little link to purchase the book on Amazon, but also a bunch of free resources from the book that are geared more towards the health perspective. It's called Lifelong Youth, The Simple Steps to a Long and Youthful Life. And so there's a lot of important information in there about eating, drinking water, as well as leaning into play and moving your body and going outside and embracing discomfort, all the things that we talked about, because literally all of these things go hand in hand from a wealth perspective to a health perspective, but ultimately from happiness at the forefront, all these things are interrelated. So you can accomplish all of them at once, which is the beauty of it all.
They are all connected, aren't they?
Yep.
Which is the premise of this podcast. Oh, and I love that branding, Getting Gooder. What was the inspiring or the backstory of that? Was it just, did it come to you?
Yeah, that's a purposeful grammatical error. I hope everyone caught that. Gooder is not a word, but to be getting gooder just means that you're always growing, always getting 1% better with a healthy level of gratitude and being in the here and now and appreciating every moment that you have. Because in order to really get gooder in terms of happiness and your enjoyment and excitement out of life, you have to really be present and appreciate the moments that you create for yourself. Getting gooder is about being the creator of your life, creating your ideal life right now while pursuing an even bigger, better life in the future.
Love it. It's like, get in that driver's seat, people. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I'm going to go ahead. I will link all of that content, all of the links into the show notes so that people can access your book, your blog, your website, all of it. And they can learn more about the amazing stuff that you're up to.
Thank you.
Yeah. Parker, what a fun conversation this has been with you today. Just kind of hearing your bright perspective and, you know, what you've learned through your experience on this journey to higher levels of happiness. And, you know, just reminding us too, like, we don't have to wait 1 second longer in order to feel bliss. Like, we can actually access it now. So
absolutely.
I just appreciate you taking this time to share your insights with us and just really grateful that you showed up today.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for listening and being willing to be growing with us all and listening to podcasts like Carrie's and others. So.
Yeah. Part two is going to come at some point. So
can't wait.
So yes, until then, everyone, I invite you to check out Parker on his website. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to tune in today to this episode. And until the next one, I just encourage you to think about what happiness means to you and maybe what fears are asking to be faced so that you can also live your richest, most connected, and most satisfying life. If this episode resonated with you, I have something that you may love. Part of what helps me live a life free of stress and anxiety is embracing genuine connection with myself and others. Building a coaching business centered on this principle has sparked many of my clients to their own success. So if you're looking for a way to overcome your fears and insecurities while building confidence, I invite you to check out my 12-week program, Connect to Your Core, where I help you discover your authentic self so that you can live a life of passion and purpose. I'll link it in the show notes, so check it out if you're interested. I'm so glad you joined us. So remember to stay connected.